Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm here with the rapacious rat bastard, Mike Fischetti.
Wow, I didn't know I deserved such a title. what did I do wrong? How did I offend thee?
You didn't, but ever since Ian Malcolm called Dodson, you rapacious rat bastard, in one of my favorite scenes in the new classic Jurassic World Dominion, just the turn of phrase, rapacious rat bat, just the alliteration of it is just, it's so soothing to my ears. So I've been saying it all the time, you know, can you pass the salt? Oh, no, you rapacious rat bastard.
I don't know if the word classic I would use to describe this film. Well, I don't really know many words I would use, but we'll get into that.
Oh, I've got so many words I'll use.
Okay.
This will be a fun episode because you and I are going to disagree, I think.
To some extent. Yeah.
So we're doing this episode because it's a new film, Jurassic World Dominion. But me and Mike actually did an episode on the rest of the Jurassic Park series way back 200 episodes ago. I mean, almost exactly. We're in the 240s now, and that was episode like 42 or something.
I think it was 40s because I think I went back and listened. I think it was 47.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it's far back enough that I was using copyrighted material in it, which now I don't do. But I can tell you, you called me crazy in that episode because I was at that point championing Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah, as the second best Jurassic Park movie.
I know. But you had a lot of valid points. I had some valid points. The debate continues with here the end of the Colin Trevorrow trilogy. Lucasfilm said you can end the trilogy, and he said, I'll show you who can end the trilogy. And you know what? I like the Star Wars sequel trilogy better, just because I like Star Wars as a property better. But if I'm just judging which of these six films, which trilogy actually feels of a piece with each other that works like a trilogy, I'd say actually the Jurassic World trilogy. It works more as a trilogy than the original three Jurassic Park films.
The original three Jurassic Park films do not feel like a trilogy at all. They're just three movies that happen to have been made, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, I get ahead of myself. How are you? Welcome back to the show, Mike.
I'm all right. I'm glad to be here. I've missed being here. I love being on the show.
We've missed you. Life's good?
Yeah. Same old. Just putting my nose to the grindstone. Keep working.
There you go. So in one word, can you give me a reaction to the new film, Jurassic World Dominion?
Meh. if it's one word, meh.
I don't know if Scrabble rules would allow that to be a word, but I'll accept it.
Okay. I mean, if we're going to play by Scrabble rules.
No, we don't have to play by Scrabble rules at all. I would say, well, if I had to describe it in one word, I would say entertaining. But if I had one word, not to describe it, but to just say, tell me one thing about this movie that you like, I would say puppets. That's my word.
Okay.
Lots and lots of puppets. There's a cantina scene in this movie.
Okay, sorry. A couple of things. One, if I was going to sum it up in one word that would work for Scrabble rules, I would say busy.
Yeah.
I do agree that I appreciate that this film probably had the most like animatronics and puppets and actually like real things there of any of these three films, especially considering Jurassic World literally had one shot with one animatronic dinosaur head, and everything else was CG. Absolutely everything else was fake. So yes, by comparison, this film definitely has more real things in it. Okay, we can say that.
So I've been thinking about this which is not what I should have done, but I mm-hmm. was thinking, I was trying to expect what you might say, which is not really a good thing to do because I'm sure you have a unique take. Yeah. But this is the lowest Rotten Tomato rating of any. This is mathematically speaking the worst Jurassic Park movie. So I've been thinking, well, what do people want from a Jurassic Park movie that I seem to not want, or what do I want? And I guess if I could put it really simply to start us off, I'd say that the Jurassic Park films I don't like, which are namely Part 2, Lost World, Part 3, and Jurassic World, the first one, mm-hmm. is I don't like when it's repetitive, when mm-hmm. it's doing something that Spielberg did perfectly with the first movie. Why are we doing it again? As much as I like this film a lot, and I like the last film, Fallen Kingdom, but I would not argue that they're smart movies. I would not argue that they're movies that make sense. I would not argue that they're... I would have just as much fun making fun of them as you would. Mm-hmm. But I would at least say they're doing something. Something's happening.
Yeah. All right. So, do you want me to give my thoughts on the movie now? Or are we holding off on that?
You can give your thoughts on the movie, please.
Because to kind of respond to what you're saying, because here's the interesting thing. And you may be shocked by what I'm about to say. I don't know. But yes, mathematically speaking, this is the worst Jurassic Park movie in terms of critical reception. In watching this movie, I agree with the criticisms. However, and this is just maybe how low my bar is with these movies now, but the sheer fact there were so many dinosaurs and so many dinosaurs I have not usually seen before, I was satisfied enough that this, for me, is the best of the three Jurassic World movies.
Okay. Well, audience, if you don't know, Mike is a real, genuine dinosaur nerd.
Yeah.
Like, really knows the names, knows his shit. And I was thinking about that when I was watching. I was like, I'm seeing things that I have not seen before.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And they're not making shit up like they were making shit up in Jurassic World. We're like, we made up our own dinosaur. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, we have over 1,000 dinosaur species. You don't have to make up a new one.
You don't got to make up a super duper one. And the other point that you said, I may have lost it already.
No, that it's the best of the three Jurassic World movies.
Oh, yeah. Opinion. I was going to say, do you think that any of the Jurassic World movies are better than the Jurassic Park movies?
No.
So you would take Jurassic Park 3 over any of these movies?
Yes.
Here I cannot agree with you, sir.
It's all right. I expected that. Listen, I have a soft spot for Jurassic Park 3.
I understand. 3 is definitely better than Lost World. And that's coming from someone who is a Jeff Goldblum fan. Just Lost World is just, ugh. It was theatrical, but it might as well have been made for VHS release.
Yeah, it's a very, Lost World is a kind of a strange movie in some ways. I think also one of the big things that makes a difference is you think about the fact that Spielberg made Jurassic Park with director of photography Dean Cundey,
yeah,
who you all know from like Back to the Future and movies like that. A really nice color palette. And then Lost World is Janusz Kaminski, who's been his DP ever since Schindler's List. Mm. And he really lights the Lost World very dark, and in a way that just, it takes away some of the joy.
Yeah.
And I think that's a thing with these movies, or really with dinosaurs in general, is dinosaurs tend to bring joy, at least especially for me. And so I feel like that's something that's got to come through in the lighting. That's got to come through in the way everything is presented. Like, even though I do have my problems with the fact that in Jurassic World Dominion, and I mean, especially in many of these films, the dinosaurs have become just monsters that are there to act as obstacles for the characters rather than real creatures. But at least the way that they're photographed, especially in this movie, I don't know. I just felt like it didn't feel dismal or dim. It did feel kind of like lively and bright.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the, and I've said this before on the other episode we did, but I think one of the amazing things about Jurassic Park, which, by the way, if you were to rank them, Jurassic Park is, it's not just at the top. It's the top, and then a huge drop. I mean, Jurassic Park, the original Jurassic Park is an incredible movie.
It's one of the best movies ever made, period, in my opinion. That's just me.
And what Spielberg was able to do was he was able to introduce the dinosaurs as a marvel, as something awe-inspiring, and then turn them into the shark from Jaws. And it seems like in the other films, they've either not been able to try to reach that awe again, or just not cared, just said, no, they're just monsters.
Well, that's been the problem, is I think really it's all in the interpretation, is that somewhere along that, really, I mean, I think there's still, the way the dinosaurs are interpreted in The Lost World, they're still more appropriately treated as like animals. Like, yeah, they have some, like, there's definitely some scary times, there's definitely some monster like chases or whatever, but ultimately the way that they're treated is these are real animals that will react in certain ways. I think Jurassic Park 3 is when you start to get them as more like movie monsters, and then especially the Jurassic World trilogy. That's what they are. They've been, you know, movie monsters there to like torture our main characters.
Yeah. Yes, you're absolutely right. But let me posit, in this latest film, there is a scene where our little clone girl protagonist has rode her bike out from her little safe haven, and she comes upon a dinosaur that sort of heartbreakingly kind of stuck in a construction site. And the laborers aren't sure what to do, and the dinosaur looks scared, and people are just sort of watching the dinosaur with a sort of awestruck look. And I thought it was beautiful and heartbreaking, and I thought this is as close as we come. I mean, this is awe. We're not scared here. We're thinking really about the heartbreaking idea of what if dinosaurs were stuck in our shitty world.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's, sorry, I'm also, nobody can, you know, this is good podcasting material. Nobody can see, I'm trying to look through my dinosaur books because I'm like, there's some dinosaurs I can't remember the names of that are in this movie, and it's bothering me. But I do agree that, yes, the scene with I believe that's the Apatosaurus there, the big sauropod wandering around that the clone girl tells them how to, you know, basically get it to turn around kind of and get the herd moving. Yes, that scene has awe to it. It's touching. It does make them feel like real animals. That scene is great. Absolutely.
And a little silly. I mean, the fact that no one knows how to fix this problem, but her being a clone, she just knows how to fix it. They do this thing in this movie where because she's a clone, she's somehow like very connected to them.
Sixth sense.
Yeah, I know, which figuratively should make sense. But it's too, they make it too literal. But like I said, it isn't a not silly movie. I mean, when I was watching it, I watched it twice, and the second time I was like, you know, this is like if you put every blockbuster movie into an AI and then had an AI write a script. There's Han Solo in it. There's an Indiana Jones in it. There's Raiders of the Lost Ark type stuff. There's a Star Wars cantina scene. It's really like, here's all the blockbuster DNA thrown at the wall, and here you go. Have a good time.
Here is the movie is only tolerable because Alan Grant and Ellie Sattler and Ian Malcolm are just so charming as human, like as characters. They are just so charming and so interesting to watch, even though they are doing things these characters would not do. You're so happy to see them. And they then, when juxtaposed next to, you know, Owen and, you know, whatever, Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard's character, I don't even know their names. They're like non-characters in this movie. They're in this movie, but they're not people. They are just like props. And it sticks out so much when you see those other three characters anytime they're on screen.
I agree. I have to say that I like Bryce Dallas Howard's Claire, and I like the little clone girl. What's her name? Maisie. I've never really liked the Owen character. He was always like, let's put the last episode we did, you called him Diet Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. Let's put Diet Indiana Jones
on a diet
into a Jurassic Park movie. And he's gotten sillier because, as some critics have pointed out, in the first Jurassic World movie, he tried to train some raptors. So he would put his hand out and some of the time be able to stop some raptors from attacking. In this movie, he's Obi-Wan Kenobi, dinosaur whisperer. Of any dinosaur that, if there's a dinosaur, he'll put his hand out and control them. And it's like, what is happening in this stupid movie? But I still love it.
There's nothing more painful than watching Dr. Grant put up his hand to stop the raptor.
I know.
That's like, that is not something Grant would do, nor would be happy about. It's painful.
So let me ask you, I'll go through some of the sort of critiques that we're hearing in the discourse and see how we both feel about them. Locust. Some people are going, why is the antagonistic element locusts? What do you think about locusts? Monster locusts.
Well, that's the thing is, I think it's interesting to point out one of the things that we talked about in the last episode was what and you were most excited about it was like, where is this going to go? We have dinosaurs loose in the world. And then this movie within the first 5 minutes is like, they were loose, so we put them all in one place again. That is a park, but it's like a natural preserve, not a place people can visit. So you took away the premise while also simultaneously still having them out there. And they're like, just like a inconvenience. Like, I don't even know how else to describe it. It's like, it's confusing there. But I don't, yes, I hate the locusts. I hate it. It's so like, I don't know, just like, let's just take a giant left turn and talk about something that, you know, not to knock, I'm sure there are, you know, there's really great paleontologists out there doing work on ancient extinct bugs and what have you, and great work. It's necessary. Mm-hmm. As a movie contrivance, I don't find it interesting, especially in a movie about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
A movie where the dinosaurs suddenly become an afterthought. That was weird.
So my feelings on the, I have two feelings about this. One is that, yes, Locust really feels like a left field choice for this series. But if you say, okay, if you forget dinosaurs for a second and say the antagonistic force is us using science to manipulate nature in really weird ways that will create problems. Mm-hmm. The Frankenstein problem, right?
Yeah.
Then it does thematically connect.
Oh, yeah. No, I can. Yes. No, you're right. Like it does thematically work, but it is also ultimately like, why? Like, why now? Why, you know, why this moment?
Well, look, there are things, I can't help but keep comparing this to the Star Wars sequel trilogy. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of The Rise of Skywalker, how all of a sudden Palpatine's back and nothing that was really ever set up is like now trying to be a setup. And I kept thinking, wouldn't it have been great if this Biosyn company had been throughout this trilogy? That would have, because this movie really quickly has to set up a new big bad. But to your other point, and a lot of people have been saying this, like, okay, wasn't this movie supposed to be about a world with dinosaurs in it? I would say that we do get that a little bit. But see, I kept thinking about COVID. I kept thinking about over the last couple of years, we've been just living in a reality where there is a pandemic. And it's always on the back of our minds. It's the subtext of every conversation. But life goes on and you kind of start to act as normal as you can.
Mm.
And yes, in this movie, people aren't constantly running around going, holy shit, we live in a world with dinosaurs. But given what we've gone through over the last couple of years, I think that's what would happen. You would just be like, shit, does it suck that we live in a world with dinosaurs and everything sucks? Yeah, but I'm going to get up today and hopefully I don't get eaten by a dinosaur today. I'll wear my mask.
Yes. No. I do totally understand what you're saying. Although, interestingly enough, you could make the argument that maybe a scarier, albeit, you know, maybe it would almost be uncomfortable for us to watch. But like, okay, sorry, I have to do a little bit of explanation here. So as somebody who does love dinosaurs and wishes we could clone them and bring them back to life, I am most afraid of bringing them back to life now, not so much because I'm afraid they're going to eat us, but that we're going to have new zoontological diseases brought into our world. Yeah. And that like extinct diseases or things that we don't even know about are going to get spread to us. And we'll have whole new pandemics. So, you know, there could have been a plot of this movie. You didn't need locusts. It could have been that dinosaurs are passing on a disease or something like that, as horrible as that sounds.
But you know, the locusts are cool. They're cool, weird puppets. I like that, you know, the scenes where they're flying after people. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, that's pretty interesting. I found them, you know, and my girlfriend really was grossed out by them. Anytime they were on the screen, she was like, oh God, I was not expecting this from this movie.
Yeah.
And I was like looking at her squirm and I was like, all right, that's a good, that's not bad from a movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk about the original trio, how they're used, how their storyline is almost entirely separate until the very end. What did you think about their use and their story?
You know, that's the thing is like, I think I was just so happy to see them that I almost kind of didn't care. Like,
yeah. When Ellie came on screen,
yeah,
I said to my girlfriend, are you ready to feel the Dern?
That was it, basically. She walked on. I was like, I feel the Dern.
Yeah.
Feeling the Dern. And same thing with Grant. Like, my boy Grant coming back, coming in hot.
Very
doing his
like,
Grant thing.
You know, it's funny. Again, like Star Wars, you kind of have to set them up like things have been bad for them. So yeah. Grant was giving me real Luke Skywalker, I'm sad now vibes. He was a broken out. I mean, when he's trying to talk about the dinosaurs and there were like two young girls in their 20s just like looking at their phones in front of him while he's trying to talk about fossils, I was like, oh boy, this is a bummer. But it's true. In a world where there are dinosaurs, fossils become infinitely less interesting to people, I think.
Yes and no, because I mean, like, here's the other thing, too. It's never clear exactly how many species of dinosaur they cloned. Because also, you know, in this movie, there's a whole bunch of dinosaurs that were never on any of the islands, and I don't know where they came from.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny. Life finds a way, but it would take a millennia. Like,
yeah,
they've got, like, reproduction and, like, all happening very, very quickly.
Yeah, no, and they were, like, 30 dinosaurs taken off the island, and now you're saying in like 2 years, it's like, I don't know, it's almost like rabbits, you know, like you're telling me that you've had this huge population explosion amongst all different species, and it's just unstoppable. There's no way we can stop them. These right. dinosaurs are just reproducing like crazy.
I know.
What even though weren't they all bred again to be female?
Yes, but as we know, that never works.
Okay, just sorry.
Because in this movie, Blue has by the way, they took a book out of Mandalorian and they were like, you like baby things or things you already like? How about baby Blue? You want a cute little
raptor? A baby raptor?
Beta. And
we'll make a toy out of it.
Yeah. And Maisie says, how could Blue have had a child? And it's like, it's not, that question's not answered.
Wait, I thought it was asexual, which is all the more disturbing.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. No, it don't make any sense. But, So what do you think about Dr. Ian Malcolm working for the bad guy in this weird, when we first see him in this?
So, I mean, I thought it was weird, but then I hear from people like who work in corporate America who are like, no, that's like a thing that they do. Like they'll pay really smart people who don't like them a bunch of money to come in and lecture about all the shit they're doing wrong. And then, you know, never change anything.
Yeah. I think that
sounds like corporate America. Yeah, that makes sense. And that then tracks.
He becomes a spy, a whistleblower. I do absolutely love the scene where Dodson fires him and he goes off and he's like, I want to apologize to anyone in this room who has come to this corporation because I lent it my cachet. I want you to know it is rotten to the core. You see, they give you so many promotions so fast. You lose all discernment for morality. And then he calls him a rapacious rat bastard. I was like, yay!
I mean, I also think that we're totally... Listen, I think we should spend some time talking about... So who is Malcolm's... Because I forget everybody's name. Who's Malcolm's like assistant there?
Oh, the young man. What's his name?
Yeah.
I don't know any new characters' names.
Well, it's okay because they're not really characters. So, like, that's why we don't remember any of them. It's like there was the assistant and the pilot.
His name was Ramsey.
So Ramsey and Dodson has some like low-key, very subtextual, I don't know, something going on between them. Like, it's like, we had a deal. I thought you understood what I was doing. And I was like, are they supposed to be like in a low-key relationship? Is that what's going on here?
Huh, that's interesting. You know how I read that? I read that as this villain. I think what they're trying to do is make this villain in the mold of like a Elon Musk, Tim Cook, I think I'm a good guy thing. Even when Malcolm sort of yells at him, he's like, "You're over imagining. You're seeing things that aren't there." So I think they were trying to show with that scene where he was like, "You betrayed me." That like. In his own mind, he's not a horrible, horrible person who created a locust to eat grain that was not from his own seed, but then created a global crisis. I don't know if they succeed, but it is interesting. And Campbell, I think, does do an interesting job playing a character that he did not play in the first film. Dawson is played by someone else.
Okay, yeah, that I wasn't sure. Yeah, I did not remember because I was like, that doesn't look like the guy from the first movie.
But he, in both a story beat and product integration, he has kept the Gillette can as a memento.
Think about that. He had to send somebody to Isla Nublar after they cleaned it up and like restarted and like made Jurassic World. And somebody had to scour the jungle probably for weeks and dig through mud to find that can.
Right. They should, if that was supposed to be sort of an indexical sign to the audience as to who he is, they should have put it much earlier, because I know a lot of people that did not realize who that character is supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
Until much later. Like, okay. It's because it's also a little bit like somehow Palpatine returned. It's like, okay, it's cool, but does it actually mean anything? Really? It is cool that he dies the same way Nedry died.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I did find that to be cool. But okay, so again, let's
Sorry. Speaking of that. So the Dilophosaurus in this movie, you know, Claire has that moment where she's cornered, and then out of nowhere, Owen comes and he slams its mouth shut so that it doesn't spit out the venomous spray.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, is that a thing that they would do in Jurassic World, where they would be like, oh no, the Dilophosaurus is loose, just slam that head down. That's how we stop them. That's how we do it with like alligators or something. I was like, what is that?
I know. But again, I look for the bright side. That was a tense scene.
Which one? The one where Dawson dies?
No, the one where Claire is like cornered and she's the whole little segment where she's alone and like that shot where she's under the water and the dinosaur is above the waterline shouting and like that was a cool image.
Cool image. I didn't feel as tense about it though, but it was a cool image. You're right there.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I digress. Going back to the story of the original three. So yeah, there's a sort of espionage story going on. They're sneaking in someplace. They're doing a full Death Star. We're going to steal a couple of outfits and, you know, I like it. I mean, it does feel like there's two movies going on. There's two movies in one.
The Alan Grant, Ellie Sattler movie is more interesting than the other movie.
You know, I'm glad they have a happy ending.
It's nice. It's a little fan servicey. Here's the thing that doesn't make sense. Not so glad they get together. Then remember there's that scene at the end where they're like, they're going to go in front of the Senate committee and talk about dinosaurs. And it's like, we're going to put an end to this once and for all. And then they don't put an end to, like, we never see them talk or like what the solution is.
Well, that's followed by the stupidest, most laughable montage of just animals and dinosaurs just getting along like buddies. Like, look, it's a lion running with a raptor, or it's like, guys, this is really stupid. Like,
well, wait, to top it off, I was watching it. I was like, this literally looks like they just stole the intro to The Lion King. Like, you could have put Circle of Life over that and it would not have missed a beat. It would have been the same
thing. I know. It's such a silly idea of like, look, we're going to get along. It's like, it's a little deeper than will some dinosaurs get along with some wildlife? Like, yes, that will happen. But also, some food supplies will go dry and something will, you know, pray something out of existence. And like, it's not just cool now. like this is not cool. Like, we should not be. I didn't think I'd have to say this to you guys, but we should not be living with dinosaurs.
Yeah. And also, like, sorry, I don't know why this nitpick just came up in my brain. I just heard this little voice in the back of my head go, what about the lysine contingency? Is that still in effect?
Yeah. Remind me of that.
The lysine contingency was just that the dinosaurs can't produce the enzyme lysine, so they had to feed it to them in their food. So if they don't do that, they slip into a coma and die after 7 days. Right.
Well, you know how in Star Wars, any plot hole could be washed away with it's the Force?
Yeah.
In Jurassic Park, life finds a way.
Life finds a way,
Mike.
Life found a way. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said before that this is like a bunch of other movies put together, but it's also there's a little bit of a James Bond movie in here, and maybe some Bourne Identity. There's a lady in white who is like a poacher
who just comes in and leaves. Like, she is just there for whatever, three scenes, cashes that check, and is gone.
She has a very Bourne Identity fight with Claire in a kitchen of somebody's house, and while Owen is being chased by raptors on a motorcycle. This is all silly, ridiculous shit, but I mean, it works on a level. I mean, it's entertaining, I guess. It's just, we've come so far. You know, the first movie obviously had dinosaurs in it and obviously had big scares, but there was something subtle, let me say, about the first movie. Even, I hate this word, but maybe even realistic in a sense. Like B.D. Wong in the first movie, right? He was just a scientist. Now he's this very genre character. Like, it all has become super genre-y.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I don't like that, but it all feels worlds away from the first movie.
In an awful way. Like, you know, not to, I am not saying this to take cheap shots at the superhero genre, but I do have to say that I feel like this is almost the superheroization. And we're seeing it across all kinds of movies. Yes. We're seeing this, like, everything is becoming like a superhero movie. Some of the characters are just pure archetypes. Characters are almost introduced in ways where it's like, okay, so like the lady in white there, she seems like a comic book villain.
Yes.
Who would come in and like have a couple of scenes and people would just be so happy that they were there because they know the backstory of this character is in other
right.
things. And then they would get spun off into their own TV show or whatever. Like it's just really bad. It's not good for movies.
Criticisms of the superhero vacation of cinema are totally welcome here on PCMC, because you're right. You know, the weirdest one was a few years ago, or maybe more than a few years at this point, they made a remake of Carrie with Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yes.
But taking the story of Carrie, the Stephen King story, but making it almost like a superhero origin more than this tragic horror movie. And mm-hmm. I was like, boy, it's in the water, right? It's gotten into the DNA of everything, this superhero-y way of looking at everything.
It's, you know, it's interesting you say that, because so if we can just go with me for a little bit here, think back. And what I've also realized is that, you know, like there are films that come out or there's moments where like things change other movies in ways that you could never predict. The Sixth Sense is a phenomenal movie. It's a fantastic movie. But one of the legacies of that film is essentially that you have a twist. You have like a second or third act twist. I mean, yes, there have been those in movies before then. But if you really look at blockbusters post Sixth Sense, you just start to see that kind of become part of the DNA. And I remember I've talked to students about it too, where, you know, you explain to them, like, there doesn't need to be a twist halfway or, you know, or in the third act for it to be a movie. And they were like, you know, or to be a good movie. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, that's part of movies. Movies have these twists at these points. Right. And I was like, no, you don't necessarily need the reversals, or like, you don't need that like surprise thing come out of nowhere. But it's become entrenched in the DNA. It's like now with superheroes, like whether it be now we're getting into the multiverse stuff, which is, Lord knows, that's going to be its own headache.
Right.
But you know, we're just gonna get, I don't know, we're seeing, yeah, like I said, the complication of movies, this like large universe with lots of stock characters, villains, people who show up for little periods of time. Like it's just all coming together. And it feels really weird and sad.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of this film, we do finally have some shots, some moments where you have the three protagonists of the original Jurassic Park with these characters that we've met in these subsequent films. You know, Owen, who's like died Indiana Jones, Claire, who she went from corporate archetype lady to now I'm PETA for dinosaurs lady. And who I forget her name, but I just keep calling. She's just Han Solo. She's a character that came in this movie. She's a pilot. She's Han Solo. What do we know about her? She's cool and she loves her ship more than anything.
Yeah, it's like she's a badass.
Yeah,
and she flies.
When you see all six of them in frame, it's like three of these characters definitely feel more tethered to reality than the other three. And it's like, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about something as fantastic as dinosaurs, isn't having real kind of people dealing with them more interesting than superheroes dealing with them? And also remember, in the original film, they're all scientists. They're all intellectuals. But it shows something else about our current cultural moment where we hate intellectualism. We hate learned people. So it's like Owen is the opposite of that. He's like, no. He's a roughneck laborer in the world of dinosaurs. He's not no smart book learning dinosaur man.
And think about it. Henry Wu is like kind of a villain in these three movies, or at least, you know, this is his redemption movie. But in the other two, it's like, it's his fault. He keeps making more dinosaurs. He keeps making things worse. He keeps messing around with genetics. So these smart people, they have bad motivations.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, look, and I take nothing against B.D. Wong as an actor, but just what has happened to that very minor character? He's become so villainous in this weird way where it's like, I don't know, like that. What's like, I don't know. It's come so far and it's like, why? And in this movie, he's like, oh, I feel bad about it. It's like, well, I don't know if I can forgive you just for feeling bad. Like, you did this. You created these locusts on the behest of someone else, but you did it. You know, it was, in the original film, if there's a villain, it's more corporate greed. It's more capitalism. Whereas you're right, in these new ones, it's like science is the bad thing.
Yeah, and it's not even like that in like a, how do I put this? It's not even like, so I've been going back and watching a lot of old like 50 sci-fi movies. And typically, so there are definitely instances where you have individual scientists who are bad. Not the whole concept of science, because then you also have scientists who are good who are trying to use it to deal with like the problem at hand. Whereas, like, I don't know, in these movies, especially in these last three, it definitely feels like, nope, it's big evil corporate greed using science, and science is right there backing them up, being like, yeah, let's be evil.
Well, you know, I think the difference is in the 50s and 60s, in those contexts of science fiction, science was a stand-in for the people that brought us nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Whereas now science stands for smart people and we hate these know-it-all smart people. I mean, we've gotten to a point where, you know, our last president said, I love words. I know all the words. That's a thing that he said. And people applauded him. Yay. Like, we've gotten, I won't say we've gotten dumber, but we've gotten to a point in American culture where ignorance is lauded and celebrated. It's good to know less.
Or it's that it's good for you to know, like, oh, there are just certain facts, I put in quotes, aka conspiracy theories. And like, once you know those, like, that's all you really need. Like, you don't need to go deeper than that. Once you've got that surface level understanding that everything is corrupt and everything is corruptible, that there, like, that's all you need to know. And everything is, and anything that offers help is absolutely an enemy. Like, there are no good intentioned human beings in the entire world besides somebody who is selling, what do you call it? Holistic medicine on their, and on their Etsy page. Or right. Something.
No, you're so right. There's these fundamental things that you're allowed to, you can know them just through your own intuition. But if you then go to college that will fill your head with nonsense and you'll actually be a less intelligent person because now you're brainwashed and now you've got all this weirdness in your brain where you knew better because you just, you knew whatever, quote unquote, common sense or whatever the heck it is. It's funny. This is like a whole thesis. Comparing Alan Grant to the Owen character says so much for the change in American culture.
Alan Grant, a distinguished doctor.
Yeah.
And
Ellie versus Claire. Another. Yeah. Huh. So I'm going to say two words to you. I want to know what you feel. Boy. Actually, okay. I think it's three words. Dinosaur dog fights.
Yeah, that made me uncomfortable. That legit made me, I was like, ew, this is not what I want to see dinosaurs doing. Though, like, yes, in a world like that, it would absolutely exist. Not dinging them for that. I was just more like, this is just something I don't want to watch. Right. However, yes, you are correct in this assumption.
Right, I agree. I did like that whole scene, that whole underground. I like the idea that the black market is not a figurative thing. There's literally a black market. And it's basically the cantina from Star Wars, but with dinosaurs.
And it's like, yeah, it's in a dark basement.
Yeah. And I do like at least the dinosaurs dog fighting or puppets.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. So you said that it would make sense in that world. How do you feel about poachers in both this movie and the last movie as like this antagonistic force?
I guess. Yeah, because we love dinosaurs, so we don't want people to poach them. They just feel like, again, these all feel like weird, unfocused, like, okay, we're against biotech and we're also against poachers and we're also against black markets, but we're also against big corporate greed. Like it's so all over the place.
Right. So I got a chill every time I heard an invocation of John Williams' score from the original film. And they would do it often accompanying scenes from the original three.
Yeah, that was it. They only used it when they were on screen. And I was like, you could kind of use a little more of it.
You absolutely could.
You could absolutely have used it a little more. Yeah.
But it's funny. That's another thing that reminded me a lot of the new Star Wars movies, where iconic music cues are, one is a shorthand to the audience of like, remember this? You love this guy. Remember how that made you feel? You can feel that again right now.
It's the member berries of movies.
Yes.
Remember Star Wars? Yeah. Remember Jurassic Park?
Remember Dr. Malcolm? By the way, he's just Jeff Goldblum now. There's no character left. He's just Jeff Goldblum.
There was at least a character of there was at least the character of Ian Malcolm, even in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, when he's got his little scene at the end. That's still Ian Malcolm. This movie, no, it is just, I'm Jeff Goldblum and I'm just going to be charming.
Yeah. I mean, he was a source of comic relief in the original film, but in this, he's just, no matter what the situation, he's rat-tat-tatting hilarity. Although I can't help but be delighted by it.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. Like, he's charming for a reason.
So here's a question. With both this film and the last film, how do you feel about Maisie, our clone girl, our human clone?
Wish I cared more. Don't, like, she's another, all of the characters from these Jurassic World movies are just empty vessels to me. I don't feel anything for them. I don't feel like they're characters. They're just sort of there.
Okay. Even in this film?
Yeah.
Okay. I see what you're saying. But I did like her I mean, you know, there's not a lot there. She's sassy and she wants to know where she is in the world. It reminded me of what I wanted from Rey from Star Wars. Because after The Force Awakens, I was like, oh, she's probably a clone. Like, that would make the most sense, which they did not go with. So, like, her, like, feeling, like, in the beginning when she's like, I'm not even really a person. I was like, I'm interested in this. And also thematically, I feel like that's a good next step from dinosaurs. Like, what if we cloned a person? Although in this, they make it that they retcon that she's not really a clone. She was just grown something.
I was confused. I'll be honest. I was like, they lost me somewhere in there. I know what you mean. It's like, yeah, she's like a clone of her mother, but essentially birthed from her mother. So she's not like really a clone. I don't know. I was like, okay, you all do this for reasons.
Yeah, something. I guess her arc is at the end, she feels like she's her own person.
Yeah, and like there's maybe a movie where that works. Like if you actually had her as the main character, yeah. Like I think there is a way to make that work. You're right.
All right, so I want to talk to Mike Fischetti, box office maven.
Mm.
Where do you see the future of this franchise? Are we going to let it rest for a minute and then make more? What are we going to do?
Yeah, they'll let it rest for a minute and probably make more. I don't know what they're going to do with it, but like they'll find a way to milk this further. Although, you know, it's funny. This is the kind of thing that makes me, how do I put this? I feel like Hollywood doesn't understand the fruits of its own success. So I'm going to talk about this. And I'm going to talk about Top Gun for a minute here. Top Gun Maverick.
Okay.
Which, did you see Top Gun Maverick?
I've actually seen neither Top Guns.
First off, the first Top Gun movie is it's not that great. It's meh. It's like whatever. I don't understand the love for it. But I watched it in preparation to see Top Gun Maverick. And Top Gun Maverick is a fun movie. It is a genuinely fun movie. Though, truth be told, it's just a Mission Impossible movie with fighter jets.
Okay.
Which is probably why it works. And so like I was watching it and you know, like we're seeing the box office receipts come in and they're very, very, they're both movies are doing fantastically this summer. And so what I thought, and you know, when they're like, why are they working? And I'm like, well, first off, Top Gun Maverick is a movie that has people frankly, like flying in fighter jets with a lot of practical effects as well as, you know, CGI stuff. But like, we don't see movies with fighter jets and dogfights very often.
Yeah.
Just make movies like you used to, like just crank out stuff that's similarly features planes doing dogfight. Like people will go see it because it's something we don't get to see a lot of. Same thing with Jurassic Park. Like people aren't going to Jurassic Park because they want to see this movie. They want to see dinosaurs. You don't need a copyright on dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are free. Make movies about dinosaurs. Every major studio has some, and if you really want to base it on IP, you've got something in your back catalog. You own a movie from some point in the past that featured dinosaurs that maybe you can change it and put a new spin on it and do something with it.
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's really the larger problem with mainstream media is that, you know, at some point marketing took over and it's like everything has to be IP. And sometimes you get great things, you know, I've compared it before to like the way a great poet can write within a certain meter. Like how creative can you be under the constraint of this has to be a Batman movie? But you're right that it could be exhausting in that you wish it didn't have to be that way. You wish you just go, okay, just like rip, you know, just rip off something. Like go ahead, like I'm not saying you have to make like unique films. Go ahead and make your genre movies, but why not, like you said, Matt, why not make it a dinosaur movie, not a Jurassic Park movie? But we know exactly why they do it, because it's Coke and Pepsi and it's something, mm-hmm. You know? And apparently even failure can't tarnish a good brand, you know? Like, I mean, Star Wars came out strong with The Force Awakens, and I mean that in terms of box office.
Yeah.
And then it's been somewhat diminished returns, and then they kind of were lost in the woods for a minute, and then they did good with Mandalorian, so now they've completely changed gears. It's like, Star Wars is a TV thing now. Star Wars is shows now. And some of those are good. Some of those aren't really good. Boba Fett wasn't very good. But you know what? No matter what, Disney's like, no, we paid $4 billion for this brand. We are not going to not make Star Wars movies or Star Wars shows. So whether you like it or not, this is what you get.
Well, but also at the same time, the audience is taking it. Like people are watching Mandalorian, Boba Fett, Obi-Wan. People are watching them.
Yeah.
It's not like it's not like the audience isn't there. For me, the bigger problem is that you're right. Like it's become a TV thing now instead of a movie thing. And that almost there's this feeling like even in some of the quotes you hear, it's very like, yeah, no, we're just sticking with TV. Like TV's better for this brand. And like, we're going to stick with like trying to make series that essentially fill in these holes or take place in the past. Right. But we're not going to go back to any of the characters that we know, but we're going to go to the past and cover characters we don't know. But I'm just sort of like, you keep going backward. You're not going forward.
Right. They just released a trailer for Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation or whatever, and it has Poe in it and Finn in it. And I realized the only part of Disney that is focusing on the sequel timeline or the Lego stuff, right? They've all but given up on Rey and Poe and Finn.
Which, well, and I think part of that is they soured the relationships with the actors, which was a really a mistake on their part.
Right.
Because I know I've talked to people who are like, no, now you just have to, just like with the prequel series, like you just got to wait 10 or 20 years. And then all of a sudden you'll have this new generation that grew up on the sequel movies and they'll want to see more Rey and Poe and Finn. And in my opinion, like, I don't think we have to, I don't think we should have to wait that long. And also, yeah, there's definitely stories to be told with those characters. And also, I think there are ways to do movies with them that frankly kind of make up for the lackluster ending of, The Rise of Skywalker. There are ways that you could,
I agree,
imagine like a new Star Wars movie that opens with Rey and Finn as Jedi Knights, like going doing Jedi stuff.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
Poe is a general, like helping what was the Resistance, now like trying to like restart the Republic and dealing with warlords. Like,
yeah,
you forget about trilogies. You could just keep doing movies. Like, just also, that's the other thing. Stop making trilogies. Just keep making movies till there's, it's supposed, Star Wars was supposed to be a serial. Lucas himself even intended for Star Wars to keep going. And it was only because of sort of his personal life stuff that they capped it at Return of the Jedi. But like, that was supposed to keep going. Leia was not supposed to be his sister. Which is the Star Wars that I wish we got. Like,
but you know what? This brings me back to the topic at hand. As weird and silly as the Jurassic Park series has gotten, at least we're not doing Lost World again. To me, my least favorite of all of them, and I don't know if I said this last time. I think last time I said my least favorite was Lost World, just because I find that movie so boring. Mm-hmm. But probably really my least favorite now is Jurassic World, because it's just a Lego sequel, exact ripoff of the first, and it's so uninspired. At least, as weird as it's gotten, they're doing something. I'll take a weird Star Wars. Give me a weirdest Star Wars where, like, it's Rey against, like, freaking weird clone people. Like, why is it got to be Sith? Make it anything in this big galaxy. Like, I'd be like, you know what? This is weird and different, but at least it's not the same shit again. I guess that's the way I feel about Jurassic World Dominion. This is weird, but at least it's not the same shit again.
Fair enough. And I feel bad that we haven't talked about the Gigantosaurus, which actually I thought it was pronounced Gigantosaurus. That's a whole other thing.
How do you feel about it? Let's talk about it now.
Just real quick. I mean, it was like, oh, it's just kind of the villain of the piece, but I was happy to see it because we haven't ever seen a Gigantosaurus before. We haven't seen a lot of the dinosaurs in this movie before. Quetzalcoatlus was in, that's not a dinosaur, but still Quetzalcoatlus was there. Uh-huh. Which was awesome. Like all these dinosaurs that we never get to see. And I was like, oh, it's nice to have them on screen. And especially Gigantosaurus is relatively new. That's like, they've discovered that, I feel like, in the last maybe 25 years or so.
I mean, it's cool. You could see why it works as a film, because look, it's even bigger.
Yeah.
I
guess it's bigger than the Spinosaurus. I thought Spinosaurus was bigger. I don't know. That's a whole thing I'd have to look into.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't get a lot out of that. It feels like since the Jurassic World movies have focused less on big dinosaurs and more on, I don't know, stealthy, fast dinosaurs. Although they keep trotting out the T-Rex like it's Rocky. I mean, and in this one, they do this thing where in the production design, or in the design of, you know, where they are, there's like a loop or like a hole in the gate. And T-Rex walks past it and for a moment recreates the Jurassic Park logo.
Mm-hmm.
I was not mad at that. I was like, okay. But it is funny
that was a trailer shot if there ever was one.
I know. But it is funny that like T-Rex is just, it's like Rocky in the Creed movies. It's like, oh, here's T-Rex.
Here the old is, girl's though. Coming back out.
Yeah. Like, really went from the big scary antagonist to like now our hero. It's like T-Rex in Jurassic Park has gone full Godzilla. Now it's like, yay, T-Rex is yay! It's T-Rex, defender of humans. Never mind when it ate the lawyer in the outhouse that terrified me as a child for years.
And flipped over the cars and nearly killed everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, now it's our hero. Yeah. Yeah, it's dumb. geez, is there anything else we wanna cover? Is there anything else any points you wanted to make? I'm sure I know this series is near and dear to you.
No, I'm okay. I'm at peace with it. I have nothing more to say of Jurassic World or really the Jurassic Park movies in general. Just, hey, the first one's still great. Watch it anytime.
How would you feel if, and I think this is actually could happen. It's likely, or it's not likely, but I would totally not be surprised if it happened. What if, who makes Jurassic Park?
Universal.
What if Universal were like, the future of the series, television series, 10-part series. We're gonna reboot from the beginning Jurassic Park as a series. And how would you feel about that?
Like, again, just wildly unnecessary, but like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I would wait to see reviews and see if it's worth sitting and watching, because yeah, who wants to spend 10 hours watching something that's really not worth it, you know?
If you were the brand manager and you had to think of the next step, what would you do? Would you want to pare it back down, or would you want to go wilder into Weird Town?
Because
that's where we are now, Weird Town. We got locusts and human clones and
I would pare it back down, and I would try to, I mean, I would probably, though, like, how to put this, like, I would reboot. But what I would do is I would essentially steal from another movie. I would kind of steal from, there's an old Universal film from the 1950s called The Lost Continent, which is, you know it?
I know it. I haven't seen it, but I've read about it.
Oh, okay. So yeah, it's basically, those of you who haven't seen it, it's a movie about a military expedition to a warm water oasis in the Arctic. And it turns out they basically land in a place where they find it's still the Mesozoic era. There's all these dinosaurs living in like a valley or whatever, and like that to me is like where I would go. I would like kind of find a way to like totally reboot. There's no Jurassic Park, there's no nothing, but have it be some kind of, or I don't know, find some way to be like, oh, these people are looking for this island that supposedly has dinosaurs on it so that they can take them and open up a park or something like that, you know?
Okay.
And then that way, yes, it's a little Lost Worldy, but I am not interested in wherever this is going. And I don't know. I feel like we all need a fresh start, because there's just been so much layering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially Jurassic World. There's just so much layering of new military stuff and underground black market for dinosaurs. I don't know. It's too weird for me.
Did you see Kong versus Godzilla?
Yeah, actually fairly recently I did.
Well, there was like, again, this is not the most intellectual movie in the world, but it was fun as hell. But I'm thinking in that, like, isn't like in that movie, like in the core of the earth is like a dinosaur world or something where Kong has a throne? Who built it? I don't care. That's what you just made me think of.
I've seen Kong vs. Godzilla. That was another one where I was just like, you guys keep missing the point of these movies. It's not the humans. It's for us to watch Kong and Godzilla beat things up. And I have no idea how they're going to do a sequel to that, but apparently they are.
I'm sure they are. I loved it. And I didn't like the first Godzilla, the 2016 Godzilla, but I did like Kong Skull Island. So you know where Jurassic Park is somewhat screwed in today's market? There's no cinematic universe there. No. There's no Spider-Man where you can bring in other Spider-Mans. Like, there's no way to be like, oh, yes, it's Jurassic World, but look, E.T.'s here. You know? Because if they could, they would. Because that's what scares me about the multiverse thing. Because now the multiverse is like, it's just pure IP. Like,
Then why aren't we getting like kind of weird? I don't know. Okay, so like, here we go. Like Disney, for example. Disney has really, like, okay, so besides maybe that one scene in like Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Yeah.
You've never had anything really where you have all of the Disney princesses or whatever like crossover into a thing. Like, I'm sorry, people would fork down money to see a movie where you had
a bunch
of those Disney characters like crossover for, you know, like a Kingdom Hearts style thing.
I agree. And they just did the Chip and Dale movie. And even that had an opportunity, as a Disney movie, it had the opportunity to do it. But then it ended up being more like just 80s cartoons, like He-Man and Skeletor in it. And it's like, I don't know. I didn't like the Chip and Dale movie. My expectations, I guess, were different. But you're right. They've not done that.
And actually, there was a while where the company, that was like actually a rule. There was a rule where it's like, these characters don't exist in the same universe. They do not cross over with each other. I mean, even now, if you go to the parks, they don't know each other. You go and talk to a face character. Like, they don't know.
Yeah. And I remember one time I was reading an article about the most financially successful brands. And they were the ones that you would have guessed, like Star Wars and stuff. But then Disney Princesses was on there. And it's like, you don't think about that just because we live in a misogynistic world that wouldn't give value to that. But in fact, there is a lot of value in this brand of Disney Princesses. Maybe they'll reverse that when they see the dollar signs.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. It's strange. I've always thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mike Fischetti, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about Jurassic World Dominion. Can't wait for you to come back to talk about Jurassic World, the Disney Plus series or whatever it is.
The Peacock series. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I did want to say is that, and I told you, I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife recently, and like, I loved it. And it's still with me.
I'm still thinking
about it. Yeah.
And you're not like a huge Ghostbusters fan the way I am.
No, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I enjoyed the first Ghostbusters movie. I'm like, oh, this is a fun movie. It's like 3 stars for me. It's good, but it's not something I revisit a lot. And it's something that, you know, does connect to like the kid inside of all of us of, hey, imagine you getting to hunt ghosts and wearing wearing the pack and everything. It's all cool.
Yeah,
but like this movie really got that. Ghostbusters Afterlife really connected with that. You know, this is a fun thing that you, like, your inner child loves.
So these are all in this sort of like conversation of Lego sequels. What do you think Ghostbusters Afterlife got right that you would wish some of these other brands would do?
Really making your own stories with characters that we like. Really developing, focusing on these new characters that we like. And then if you're going to have the older characters, have it be really brief. Like, that was sort of the thing that I liked about Ghostbusters Afterlife was,
yes,
you had Rey in like basically one scene alone. And then the three of them show up at the end, but like very brief. They are not there for very long. They don't steal the spotlight, and our heroes end up still saving the day. And like, that's what matters. So
yeah, it's this interesting conversation of how do you utilize legacy characters. In Star Wars, they were like, okay, we'll have Han in this one, but then Luke will have to wait to the second one. And then with Jurassic World, it seems like they reverse engineered that. The Jurassic World was meant to be something new. And then in the second one, they were like, let's just throw in one little cameo for Ian Malcolm. And then this one is like full on.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody's here.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only one who didn't show up was the ghost of John Hammond. That was the only one we were waiting on.
Or grown up, whatever the kids, I forget their
Tim
name.
Tim and Lex. Yeah, I'm surprised they weren't in there.
Yeah. Well, I did love the fan service moment where they were talking about how they control them with electronic chips. And he was like, well, do you know how much voltage was in the electric fences at Jurassic Park? And Alan was like, yes. That was fun. That was fun fan service. Fan service is like candy. You know, I know it's not good for me, but I eat it up.
Yeah.
Mike, thank you so much for being here. Mike Fischetti. This is PCMC. We come out every week. This is your podcast for pop culture ephemera and all fun stuff like that. We end every episode by saying,
eyeball.